Ladies and gentlemen, we don't have a quorum yet, so we can't conduct official business, but we will because of the time constraints and four good bills we'd like to hear today. I'd like to start. Now, we're going to go a little out of order as we excuse Representative Aaron Peterson to go to a funeral, and his backup apparently is still at lunch. So they're tracking him down. But Representative Gunther, if you'd be so good as to start with House File E, you want to do 1347?
Mr. Chairman, that's the CapEx bill?
Yes.
CapEx 2020, yes. And
I would very much like to do that one first, and then we'll get the other one second.
And members and audience, we're going to hear all of these bills today. We're going about 20 minutes each of discussion and presentation, and maybe 10 minutes or so for questions from the members. And then they're going to be laid over for possible inclusion. And here in all 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to have a framework bill that Representative Westrom is going to have his name on, and we're going to start putting elements from each of these bills into the omnibus bill that we'll have coming out of this committee on transmission issues. That's the plan at this moment, at least as it was explained to me. So, Representative Gunther?
Mr. Chairman, I move House File 1347 for possible inclusion in the omnibus transmission bill, I guess.
And we will lay it over for possible inclusion.
Very well. Members, the CapEx 2020 group has met with you before. They're made up of the five largest electric utilities that serve the state of Minnesota. And they told us that the last period of large-scale improvements in the electric grid was made in the 1970s. Those improvements served us well for 30 years. Now, the project that the state will demand 6,300 new megawatts for our grid, and that's over the next 15 years. And the grid that has served us so well will not be able to deliver that much new power to the communities around the state of Minnesota without improving this grid. The world has changed since the last time we visited transmission in the 70s. And the reason we're doing this, members, is to get reliability so we don't suffer from potential blackouts like we have twice. And House File 1347 makes changes that are necessary that we need in state law to respond to the world that we live in today. This legislation will make sure that the electric grid in Minnesota is reliable, robust, and ready to take the changes of the 21st century. Those of us who have looked into this issue know that what's at stake. In 1998, we lost transmission that connected Minnesota with Iowa and Wisconsin due to a line of strong thunderstorms. The integrity of our grid and some quick actions by those who operate the grid managed to isolate the problems and keep the power flowing to most of the state. In 2003, when the Northeast was blacked out, Minnesota felt the effects of that event, but we maintained our delivery of power and actually helped keep Northwestern Ontario up and running during this crisis.
Yeah.
We know that this demand is going to do nothing but grow. So to describe House File 1347, we have Judy Hofro from Xcel Energy that will explain in detail the bill.
Judy, would you spell your last name for me, please?
Yes, it's P-O-F as in Frank, E-R-L.
And you pronounce it
Hofrel.
Hofrel. E-O-F-E-R-L.
E-R-L, right.
Let me stop you for just a moment here. We're going to do a little official business because we have a quorum, so we'll now call the meeting to order. I think the first thing we need to do, members, since we have a quorum, is the approval of the minutes from February 16th. Have we got Representative Rood's name in the minutes yet this year, Madam Secretary?
No.
Would you move the minutes?
Sure.
Discussion to those minutes. Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. and we have adopted the minutes. Thank you. Now, we do have some other business that relates to gaming issues, so if you'll wait for just a moment while I get it explained to me, we'll make those motions. Okay, we have presented to our committee House File 1092, 1179, 1208, and 1361. Members, those bills need to be referred to the Gaming Committee. We also have to liquor, the Liquor Subcommittee, House File 1163, 1226, 1376, and 1415. Okay. First, let's have the gaming motion. Somebody on the Liquor or the Gaming Committee make that motion? Representative Westerberg moves that we refer these four bills to the Gaming Committee. Discussion to that point? Seeing none, let's vote on the motion. All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. To gaming they go. We have four House files to the Liquor Subcommittee. I think the new liquors are Representative Hoppe. Would you like to move those?
I would like to move those bills.
Thank you. Those four House files that I named a moment ago are going to the Liquor Subcommittee if this motion passes. Discussion to the motion? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Representative Hoppe has something to do with the Liquor Subcommittee. Thank you. Okay, now we'll go back on track with House File 1347. Representative Hilty, you're on deck after this bill, so you can be collecting your thoughts there. And we'll ask Ms. Poffrell to proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, again, I'm Judy Poffrell with Xcel Energy, and I'm here to explain to you a bill that's supported by five utilities, investor-owned, and a cooperative and municipal. That's Great River Energy, Minnesota Power, Otter Tail Power, Missouri River Energy, and Xcel Energy. And we are the companies that form the CapEx effort that I know you have already heard about. You know, as you heard a few weeks ago, that our CapEx effort was really two-pronged. One, the major part of it, which I think you heard mostly about last week, is to create the vision for transmission infrastructure that we think is needed to continue to provide reliable energy services here in Minnesota. So setting that vision of what's needed to deliver power is a major part of the CapEx effort. What's contained in this bill are the steps that we see as the utilities charged with bringing that about as improvements needed in the system to make sure we can actually act on those efforts and deliver those efforts. So I'll walk through for you the major components of the bill. It's a four-part bill, four sections. And the first section, I guess I would call the step that we're trying to improve here is the alignment of interests. And by that, I'd say the interest between the state in that continued provision of reliable energy services through more transmission investment and the utilities' interest in being able to deliver that by being assured of or have a path towards timely and certain cost recovery. So I know you heard before we're talking about $1 billion of investment to support energy delivery over the next 15 years. To help us make sure that can happen, we need a timely and certain path towards the recovery of those dollars. And that's really what Section 1 of the bill does. It, in providing that path, the recovery would still be subject to all the approvals of the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. The type of investments that would flow through the rate recovery would have been reviewed and approved through all sorts of other existing state mechanisms. But what this provision does is provide a path for timely recovery as we're making those investments over the 15 years. Certainly when you're talking about transmission facilities, it takes a long time between the conceptual design and the initial planning to the certification, the routing, and actual construction. Until you finally energize the line, there is a lot of time and dollars involved. The current regulation simply doesn't allow us to collect. And what this piece of the bill would do is provide a mechanism for doing so. So I consider that first part of the bill really a major step forward in aligning interests to get this done. The second section of the bill I guess I would call it, it's one that we propose in order to provide a greater flexibility and options, again, to make sure we can deliver what we think we need to continue to provide reliable energy services here in Minnesota. Basically, what the second piece of the bill does is create a new option, doesn't mandate it, just creates a new option for a new type of transmission facility that may do planning, may finance the investments needed to create these lines or build these lines, that would be come under the auspices of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And what this piece of the bill does is simply create the option for the approval of utilities here in Minnesota to participate in such an entity, and gives for the Public Utilities Commission some standards to consider when evaluating such proposals, what the decision criteria would be. So this is something that is that I guess the utilities would say is an important new option that should be provided for by statute. It's not a mandate. It's not a certain event, but certainly looking forward to how we can bring about this $1 billion of investment, we think that this added option would be beneficial. So that's Section 2 of the bill. Section 3 turns more from the dollar recovery or the structure to back to the state as far as what criteria should we use to evaluate proposals to build transmission. And as we looked at the existing criteria in the Certificate of Need Statute, this third section amends the Certificate of Need Statute, we saw that additional clarity would be needed to ensure that the facilities that we have identified or are in the process of identifying in that vision study actually get judged in a way as we're evaluating whether the state will give us approval to build it, that helps make sure that they can get done. And again, this piece of the bill doesn't change anything with respect to public participation, doesn't change anything with respect to the various requirements we need to meet before we go build a facility, but tries to bring the criteria that the state will judge a particular proposal into kind of our current age where transmission is used, as I think you heard in the previous presentation when CapEx presented, transmission is used in a different way than it was when these criteria were first put in place. So it's simply trying to bring the state's decision-making criteria into kind of the present day and help ensure that by the time we go through the approval process that the facilities we've identified as being needed can get fairly judged. And that's what's in Section 3. Section 4 of the bill is a study provision under the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force. And I guess I'd call this piece of the bill the consensus building part of the bill, and also, in a way, a bill that reflects that the devil's in the details. I mean, we proposed the first three sections of the bill, which we think are very important to helping us deliver what we think we need to deliver on behalf of our customers and on behalf of Minnesotans. But frankly, there's only so much that does get done in statute. Lots of other things happen through other processes that happen in front of administrative agencies, et cetera, with the need and routing processes. And we would like to be able to take that next step of getting all the stakeholders together, many of which you're going to hear from today as they're talking about other bills, around the table to talk about what other improvements would be helpful in our processes to, again, help facilitate getting the needed investment and the needed infrastructure in place to meet customer needs. So I'd call Section 4 of the bill kind of, again, a forward-looking one, but one really geared towards further consensus building. And that's the overview of the utility-supported bill. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Members around the table, any questions? Ms. Propel, I have just one technical question. We're talking about upgrading the transmission grid. Of course, the first thing that comes to mind is acquiring new property and building new towers and stringing wire. Do upgrades to existing corridors count in this upgrade that you're talking about with the CapEx 2020 proposal?
Chair Westrom, yes, it would. I mean, overall,
Actually, I'm sorry. My name's over there.
Okay, I apologize.
That's all right, ma'am.
I was thinking that didn't look right. Okay, well, I'm ready to go. I guess I won't be doing this again.
He's much
later.
Better.
Okay. it certainly would. And overall, as you're developing a transmission plan,
yeah.
One of your major goals is that you make the best use of your existing infrastructure, and certainly the existing right of ways are very important. To us. So I think obviously your first choice as you're looking at how do you meet needs is to take advantage of what you've got, look at whether there's ways you can upgrade what you've already got before you go to the efforts of, you know, totally new siting. But even those upgrades to in an existing corridor where existing facilities are needed may require certification or other approvals from the state, and certainly can require a significant amount of investment. So they would be covered by the bill.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments before Representative Pisan?
Just a quick one, well, I hope, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. On the second section?
Yes.
Currently, how do utilities recover the cost of transmission services? Are those generally just passed? How does that work now?
Right now, cost of transmissions are built into the base electric rate that's charged to all customers, and they do not change outside of a rate case where the Public Utilities Commission reviews all of our costs and set brand new base rates.
And if I can just follow up, and the tariff rates that FERC has, is that those must be in existence now too, right? How do those two things interrelate?
Right. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission regulates the wholesale markets and oversees the federally regulated transmission facilities, which right now would be the Midwest Independent System Operator. And there are options within that MISO structure for other organizations to participate. You can participate as an individual utility. You can participate as more of a joint venture. And what this piece of the statute is allowing is kind of that joint, a more of a joint venture type participation in MISO. FERC does approve MISO's tariff rates. And as utilities are buying transmission services from MISO, they may be paying that rate. And that's why within this piece of the legislation we talk about if we move to a different type of structure, the cost recovery would likewise change somewhat, which is the Section B of that part of the bill.
And if I could, okay. Go ahead. And so the would the retail rates then are charged to the consumer, that still be subject, if this would work out this way, then you'd spin off this company that would reduce your transmission, then would, for instance, Xcel have a contract with that entity to buy that transmission, or how does...
Right. Well, you know, and this is part of the notion that this, the particular type of entity that may be engaged in under this piece of the bill, we have not gotten to the point of the very specifics of what that structure would look like and what all it would do. I think it does run the gamut between, folks potentially totally moving all their transmission assets to that, and the local utility isn't doing that anymore, this other group is, to other types of participation that may not be as, that far along on the continuum. And we don't have a specific plan for exactly how we think that that should look. We think it's important to keep it in the bill, though, to create additional options. When we're talking about needing to finance, upwards of $1 billion over 15 years, frankly, the utilities coming together doing the cooperative effort to raise that capital may offer advantages in lower costs or greater access to capital markets or something like that, and we think that the flexibility is important. But the real specifics about would this be, how many services this particular organization, we have not worked all the way through. There are different models out there, and I think we're open to exploring that.
Thank you, Ms. Popper. Representative?
Yes, that's fine.
Thanks. Representative Gunther, do you care to make any summary remarks?
Mr. Chairman, again, I reiterate that this bill primarily focuses on reliability, and I think it's a very essential part that everybody agrees that we want to make sure the lights are always on in Minnesota.
Thank you. With that, Representative Gunther removes his motion to lay over House File 1347 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Gentle people, let's move on to House File 1332. Representative Aaron Peterson authored this bill. Representative Bill Hilty is so good as to actually do the presenting for Aaron today. Representative Peterson today. Excuse me. Yes. While Representative Hilty is taking the stand with his testifier, the page has a side-by-side comparison of the four bills we're hearing today. Okay, the side-by-sides will be distributed here while we're coming to the table. So members, as these are being discussed, I'm sorry we didn't have them out before Representative Gunther presented, but you'll have some... a matrix that can tell at a glance where the bills are similar and where they may differ. Representative Hilty, would you care to move House Bill 1332 to be heard, considered, laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. That would be my motion.
Okay, and why don't you proceed?
Mr. Chair, I should point out that there is an author's amendment.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, I just noticed that.
And I would move the adoption of amendment AO5-03134.
And that will put the bill in the shape that you want for presentation. Sure. Members, we have the 134 amendment in front of you. It's in your packet that Representative Hilty is moving. Is there any discussion to that amendment? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. The bill is revised. House Bill 1332. Representative Hilty, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you have observed, Representative Aaron Peterson is the chief author of this bill, and I believe that most of the committee is already aware that his absence today is due to his attendance at a funeral in his district. Mr. Chair, I volunteered to introduce the bill in his absence.
Thank you for doing that. Appreciate it.
I have to point out that I do not have the same familiarity with the bill or its history as Representative Peterson would. So for those members who have found it inconvenient to read the House summary, I will point out that what House File 1332 does is direct the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission to establish a tariff designed to facilitate the development of community-based wind projects and optimize the economic development benefits flowing from them at the local regional, and state level. And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I have with me today Mr. Dan Jewell and Mr. George Crocker, who I would ask to run us through the fine features of this.
Great. Who is going to go first? Representative Hilty. Mr. Jewell? Please pull the microphone over there so we can get you on tape and we can all hear you. If you'd identify yourself for the record, we'd appreciate that too, and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. members of the committee, my name is Dan Jewell. I am from Pipestone, Minnesota. And I am here basically to speak on this bill for a lot of people that are involved in community-based development, and this includes all aspects of business in rural and metro people as suppliers, contractors, electricians, bankers, accountants, etc. Basically, the community-based energy development proposal is looking at structuring a power contract availability for community-based projects to flourish throughout Minnesota. These projects can be owned by farmers, local businessmen, schools, local communities, and the tariff would create a stable market, which would also help us attract component suppliers in this wind energy development. basically, most of the renewable energy projects that are out there today are owned by large companies, which historically have not been headquartered in Minnesota. And as a result of this, most all of the ownership benefits do not accrue to local or state economies. Local ownership of the renewable energy projects keep all of the financial benefits of this development in our communities, which is a huge thing. Without a seabed tariff, few locally owned projects will be built in the future. Minnesotans, through the legislature, have spoken, and the preference for, and the requirement for wind energy development has been laid out in statute. If we're going to do this, we should do it right and leverage the environmental benefits of this renewable energy into long-term economic development benefits for greater Minnesota. And what are the benefits of the seabed project? Basically, the financial benefits stay within the community. All of the financing that these local projects are doing, we use local banks to keep that money in the community. We attract equity partners that bring investment capital into the communities. And they create and support many jobs through all kinds of different contractors and professions and Main Street business in rural Minnesota. Mm-hmm. As a result, significantly more dollars per megawatt circulate in the local economies compared to the larger projects that we see today. A lot of the genesis of the seabed was the accounting, General Accounting Office came out to us and they wanted to do a report. They wanted to look at the benefits of these community-based projects versus the large projects that were going on. And they did a very detailed study. And in comparison, in that study, they have some tables. And if any of the members want to get a copy of that study, we can get that to you. It's from the GAO. It shows that the local ownership can generate significantly higher economic impacts for the communities. And for example, they put in a single 40-megawatt project in Pipestone County, Minnesota, would generate right around $650,000 of new income annually if it was owned by a large entity. In contrast to that, if 20 locally owned 2-megawatt projects equaling the same amount of generation were developed, it would generate $3.3 million in local benefits to the community. It's a huge difference. Basically, they
Mr.
provide
Joel,
2.5.
I'm going to take you up on that. That report from the GAO, could you make that available over the next week or so to the members of this committee? We keep hearing those numbers, and it would be great to actually have the research behind them so we have the credibility as we're moving ahead with this project.
Mr. Chairman, I will definitely get that to you.
Thank you. That's appreciated. Please continue. Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem. The local ownership provides 2.5 times more jobs and 3.7 times more dollars to the local economies, which translates to huge benefits to the state.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, and this could relate, Mr. Chairman, to some of the discussions we're having about transmission, where can these projects be built? Well, in Minnesota, there's over 1,000 electric distribution substations and 100,000 miles of wire throughout Minnesota. The wind resource maps show that all of western, central, and southern Minnesota have sufficient winds with today's technology to develop this. The communities in the metro and the northeast could partner up with these communities in the other areas and reap the benefits of the development. The majority of Minnesota's counties could easily absorb at least 10 megawatts of locally owned generation, and some counties could take 100 megawatts. And by doing dispersed generation like this, we could actually help unload some of the transmission system as we develop our renewable energy resources instead of loading them up by trying to put it all in at one spot at one time. These projects will be put closer to the load centers of the communities, and the power is more absorbed. Now, I guess the question is, what does this mean to the stakeholders? What does this bill mean to the stakeholders out there? And basically, if we looked at using a front-loaded power contract, which the bill basically wants to put in, or is in, and we have a net present value rate of 2.7 cents per kilowatt hour, which is below the avoided cost of most utilities today, and their costs continue to go up, this is what basically what we would get. The ratepayers would get clean, stable, long-term, low-cost electricity to the ratepayers that is not subject to the fuel adjustment clauses that we see in our bills or environmental penalties from the fossil fuels and nuclear generation. The utilities will have in their mix energy that costs them less as time moves out, a source that mitigates the fuel risk of natural gas, plus all the green values to offset the emission penalties of fossil fuels and the costly storage of nuclear waste. And then what do the rural communities get? They get hundreds of millions of dollars of economic development. Referring back to the GAO report, if we did half of the portfolio standard of requirements or objectives that we have on the books today, this would translate to probably over $1 billion in economic development, and $85 million a year would be generated into the local communities of Minnesota, a huge economic development thing. And the state would have statewide economic development, a new stable tax revenues from this generation income, and it would increase the ADA's ability to attract manufacturing and technology because we have a stable market. And we do have interested manufacturers out there that are interested in bringing their technology to here if we have a market. There will be a significant amount of additional generation built in Minnesota with or without a seabed tariff, but the overall need for more energy and the economics of power generation are driving demand for wind farms. The more important question is, who benefits from this additional generation? This seabed tariff will ensure that some of the new generation will be owned by local communities. The local ownership provides significantly more financial benefits. These and local state economic benefits will significantly improve the long-term economic health of our great state. Please, let's do this right. George, do you have any...
Thank you for your comments. Any questions for Mr. Jewell before we move on? Not at the moment. Mr. Crocker, welcome to the committee. Would you please identify yourself for the tape recording also and proceed with your comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is George Crocker. I'm the Executive Director of the North American Water Office. I just have a couple brief comments.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. One of them relates to the amendment that you received with the information today. You notice on subdivision 2, the tariff rate, that the House research did references the utility's avoided costs. And then if you hearken back to the presentation that Mr. Jewell gave relative to the 2.7 cents per kilowatt hour, this is the one of the amendments that we're making in the bill. Instead of picking an avoided cost by the utility, which is in a sense a black box, it's very confusing. There's an end all hours avoided cost. There's a peak hours avoided cost. It's different for many utilities. What we're trying to do here is to pick the number that works. What we're trying to do is to pick the number that allows the community-based development to go to the bank. So we have that steady financial climate that allows capital to form around the community-based energy. And 2.7 cents is certainly levelized over net present valued over the life of the power purchase agreement is a number that does that, and it's a number that is below most utilities' filed avoided costs. The second thing that I'd like to say has to do with the fact that this does provide that stable economic climate for capital. This committee is very familiar now with what happens when we do not have such an environment for community-based wind. That's what House File 218 is all about, where it's jerky. There's 100 megawatts, and then it stops. Who's in? Who's out? It's subject to this. It's subject to that. And then the people I'm working with pull out long knives and start cutting each other as to who gets it. That's not right. And what this does is provides that environment that allows for a stable, ongoing, community-based development to happen. We think that's a very, very important part of it. And then the third thing, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to say, again, relates back to the transmission. Transmission is historically, at any rate, inherently quite controversial. There are many people who wonder why they are subjected to this type of an intrusion and what is the just compensation for it. What CBED allows, what this tariff allows, is for any time, any landowner finds himself facing new transmission, particularly new transmission required to meet the renewable energy objectives that we've all said we want. The CBED tariff enables all of those people to have a direct ownership stake in the economic development that will happen as a result of our commitment to renewable energy. And we think just as a matter of fairness, that is a very, very important part of the CBED tariff. Thank you very kindly for your time, and we really look forward to including this language in the vehicle that ultimately moves forward.
Thank you. I'm sorry for the interruption while we did a little housekeeping here. Anyone else testifying for or against?
No.
Members, do we have any questions for Mr. Crocker, Mr. Jewell, or Representative Hilsey? Representative Walker.
Actually, Mr. Chair, this isn't for those gentlemen. I'm just interested in knowing who handed out the long version of the comparison.
Thank you. Just a minute. Apparently, Representative Walker asked the question. Representative Walker asked the question, who handed out the side-by-side comparisons?
The longer version.
The long one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the answer is Beth Soholt from Wind on the Wire, who will be presenting the last bill today. And so that's the side-by-side, the work that she did that you're looking at. Any other questions or comments? I just have one thought for either Mr. Crocker or Mr. Jewell. The amendment that applies or 2.7 cents instead of the avoided cost, do you think that will, I know this is today, 2005, that's a good number. Is it still going to work for you 20 years from now? Are you okay with that? Do you think the predictability is valuable enough to make that work?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we've been working on these community projects for a long time and crunching many, many numbers to get the financing through, and we do believe that a net present value rate at 2.7 will be sufficient to develop the resources now and as we move out in time.
Okay.
If the economics could change somewhat, but so could the technology that could change with it and move it. But for the now and the near foreseeable future, that rate will get the job done.
That's what we wanted to hear. Thank you very much. Further questions for Representative Hilty?
I love it.
Or the testifiers, preferably.
Preferably.
Seeing none, Representative Hilty renews his motion to for House File 1332 as amended to be laid over for possible conclusion in the omnibus bill. She was afraid I wasn't going to do that right. I think I nailed it, didn't I? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hilty, and Mr. Jewell, Mr. Crocker. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, while they're clearing the DAs, we'll ask Representative Westrom if he would approach with House File 1344. Members, you can be looking for that in your packet. Also, you'll note in your packet, we did get testimony from Laura and John Reinhart concerning House File 1347. That's a little light reading for you this evening. Or as we move ahead over the next week or so on this bill, you may want to read that testimony and consider that as well.
You're good.
Representative Westrom, welcome back to your committee.
Good to be here, Mr. Chair. Looks like everything's running better when
we
I'm gone.
We don't want to think it's going too well. We miss you. Representative Westrom, you have House File 1344. Should I move that?
Sir, did you move the other bills?
No, we've had the members moving them. Moving them to lay them over for possible conclusions.
I'd like to do that, move HF 1344 for possible inclusion. And,
okay, Chair Westrom, or Representative Westrom moves his bill, House File 1344. And you have your guest with you. Representative Westrom, if you'd like to give an overview, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members,
thank you.
I'll just do a brief overview and then let Deputy Commissioner Garvey review most of the aspects in this bill. In a nutshell, this bill would achieve some of the consolidation of the process that goes on to plan and proceed with building a transmission line, allow for some cost recovery sooner in the process to utility companies as they, once they start constructing, they could take a portion of their transmission costs and start recovering them right up front, and also allows for PUC to establish some community-based wind or energy development tariffs. And so it kind of runs the gamut on all the issues. And so with that, I'll let Mr. Garvey go through it in greater detail.
Mr. Garvey, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape, and because we do know who you are, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Commerce.
House File 1344 is the department's renewable energy bill. This bill is designed to promote the generation and the deliverability of electricity from renewable fuels, particularly wind. It does this by breaking down three barriers. One barrier is the difficulty small, non-capitalized wind developers have to finance their projects. Another is the uncertainty and slowness utilities have in recovering the considerable costs they have to incur when investing in new or upgrading transmission lines. The third barrier is the government review process of these types of projects. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd like to now quickly walk through the five sections of House File 1344. Section 1 of House File 1344 will help small, non-capitalized wind developers finance their projects by requiring all load-serving entities to offer a front-end loaded tariff. As in all tariff designs, there are many details that will have to be worked out. This language directs the Public Utilities Commission to work out those details by January 15, 2006, and issue a model tariff that everyone would have to follow. While directing the PUC to develop the model tariff, the language does offer some guidelines. First, the tariff should be designed to be a financing mechanism, not a subsidy program. Only Minnesotans should benefit from the tariff, and utilities need to take electricity from generators under the tariff only to the extent they have a resource need for the electricity or to meet their renewable energy objectives. Sections 2 and 3 of House File 1344 are designed to give utilities greater certainty and speedier cost recovery when they spend money on transmission lines that enable electricity generated from wind to reach consumers. Section 2 allows all investor-owned utilities, and not just Xcel as under the current law, to recover costs related to the REO on an accelerated basis. Section 3 outlines the criteria for when the PUC may allow these utilities to recover those costs. Sections 4 and 5 of House File 1344 are process improvements. Section 4 accelerates the government's approval process for transmission lines needed for renewable energy generating sources, while Section 5 exempts large wind facilities from the PUC's Certificate of Need determination. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, while explicitly designed to promote renewable energy, House File 1344 also tries to promote the Department's other goal of encouraging much-needed investment in our state's congested transmission grid. Transmission investment is needed not only for renewables, but to assure regional reliability as well as access to low-cost, environmentally superior energy sources. Accordingly, the Department is more than willing to work with authors and stakeholders to find better ways, better ideas, or better language to deal with these dual goals of promoting both renewable energy and investment in the state's transmission grid. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's a very quick overview of the various provisions. I think it sort of accurately and appropriately describes them, and I would certainly be able to answer any questions that you or the members have.
Thank you, Mr. Garvey. I appreciate those comments. Questions for Mr. Garvey or Representative Westrom? Representative Powell. I knew it would come to me soon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is more to Commissioner Garvey. I appreciate your last point. You did point out at the beginning of your testimony that this was a renewable energy bill for transmission. Representative Gunther had come to us, I think, with a comprehensive bill that from the utilities that allows for greater reliability of the transmission system as a whole. And while I'm on both bills, I will say that I am a little concerned that that the bill, Chairman Western's bill, only addresses the need to bring renewable energy to market. I think we need to bring all energy to market, and we need to do it in a way that's integrated and in a way that's reliable. So I appreciate your last remarks, Deputy or Commissioner Garvey, at the end of saying that you did agree that there had to be an integrated approach, and that you look forward into moving in that direction. So that's more of a comment, but if you want to respond to that, either you or Chairman Westrom, might appreciate it.
Commissioner Garvey or Chair Westrom, do you need to respond to that at all?
other than thank you for making sure you listened and I understand that we agree with you.
Well, that was swell.
Well, well said.
Does anyone else on the committee have any questions, comments? Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if you guys are the right ones to ask, but I'm just looking at this comparison sheet of the two seabed proposals. And you might not even have it, but in the other bill, there's a priority given to tariff-eligible projects, and that's not in your bill. Any sense of how that, I should have probably asked the last people, I'm sorry about that, but any sense how that would work, why that's not included in your proposal?
Representative Thiessen, I'm sure if I could drag Representative Hilty back up there, he'd
well,
be happy. Should we?
Maybe not.
I don't have the answer for that right
bring,
now.
Mr. Crocker up to
could
the.
We could, just briefly. That would be
indulge in the chair for a moment. Sure. Mr. Crocker, would you care to come up and talk about that for just a moment? And I'll have the representative repeat the question when he gets here. While Mr. Crocker's coming, members, I was remiss in not pointing out that while Mr. Jewell was commenting, there was a PowerPoint presentation in our PAC that had his comments actually in visual form. So you want to hang on to those, too. Representative Thiessen, you want to restate your question there?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has to do with the provision about priority be given to tariff-eligible projects and how what you had in mind with that.
Thank you, Mr. Crocker. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative. the idea is to not, this is not a blue sky thing. In other words, if it's if we're talking about net present or if we're talking about the net metering clauses that currently exist, if you have a project that qualifies, but the utility has to buy it regardless of whether they have a need in their system or not, because you have that qualifying facility. This is not like that. So we're in agreement with the commission and the administration bill that to the extent that there is an energy or capacity need in the forecast period, this is where the seabed tariff would apply. The difference is that in our bill, if there was power purchase agreement available for signing by the power company with the seabed, they would have to do that before they would go out to bid for a larger project or a corporate project that came from someplace else.
Representative, okay. Does that clarify?
Yeah, thank you.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Crocker. Appreciate your help on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Members, any other? Oh, I do have two other members with questions. Representative Hilty, I think, had his hand up next. Thank you. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I was going to ask or the point I was going to raise has been addressed by Representative Thiessen.
Okay, great. Thank you. Must have been a good question, Representative Thiessen. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Beard. Mr. Garvey, considering that under qualifying owner now will include a tribal council, which I want to make sure that you clarify for us before this bill advances, what law will be primary? Will it be Minnesota law, or will tribal law be primary if a tribal council is the owner of this wind energy project?
Commissioner Garvey.
Mr. Chairman, Representative.
You don't have to answer. I just need to know the answer later on.
Yeah, I'm going to have to sort of research that question.
Thank you. Thank you.
That is an interesting question. Okay,
Mr.
Yeah, we'll
Chair, I'll offer a perspective.
Representative Westrum.
I would assume the intent would be Minnesota statutes would, Minnesota law would be the dominating or the prevailing law.
Would it depend on where the meter was located, you think?
Well, it isn't. You can also write in law that, you know, certain states' laws and court systems will be the venue for and prevail over any disputes. But I mean, that's just a quick answer. We'll let Garvey look at it as well. But
okay, thank you for the question. We'll be pondering that as we move ahead to the omnibus bill as well. Further questions for the testifier or for Chair Westrum? If not, Chair Westrum renews his motion to lay House File 1344 over for possible inclusion into his very own bill that he's creating here in a couple of weeks. With that,
Chair Westrom, I'll invite you back to this spot in the view house, and I'll move over. Yeah, Representative Gunther, why don't you get your XXX bill up there.
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move House File 3050. It's not XXX anymore.
Oh, right.
For possible inclusion in our omnibus transmission bill.
Did I just hear you right? 3050?
Well, it's a number.
Just revisor number, excuse me.
Oh, okay. Gosh, I can't believe we've introduced that many bills this semester.
We are very creative here, Mr. Chairman. I have every belief before the biennium will be in the 44,000, but I guess this is still House File XXX. It's the revisor number 05-33050. And we have...
Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, we have an author's amendment that is in your packets. It's BE-29. And this Beth Schultz. Soho. We'll be glad to describe it.
So, Representative Gunther, what we will do is discuss the parts of the amendment as well, but eventually this amendment would maybe go on a whatever bill becomes the vehicle to move out of this committee. Is that all right?
Mr. Chairman, that's very correct. And we're just trying to put this the way the authors of the bill would like it.
Yeah. Okay, that's getting me clear here. We can't put it on this bill either because there is no bill, technically.
Okay. Well,
we can discuss this.
We'll have another day to do that. Members,
so
please feel free to look at the amendment.
Go ahead and tell us what the bill does.
Mr. Chairman, members, revisor's number 05-3050 is a bill that expedites cost recovery for transmission studies and transmission constructed for renewable generation facilities that satisfy the renewable energy objective. So unlike the other bill that I authored, this is dealing primarily with transmissions for the renewables and is focused on those. It sets criteria the public utility commissions must find are met in order to grant expedited cost recovery, exempt from certificate of need, large energy facilities that generate electricity from wind power and deliver to Minnesota retail customers. Or it sets a date of December 31st, 05, by which the utilities must identify transmission needed for the renewable energy objective and requires them to move to the regulatory approval process for identified transmission facilities. And lastly, it requires a statewide wind integration study of 20% by the year 2020. The study process be patterned after Xcel Energy Department of Commerce wind integration, it's not a word I use all the time, study that was recently completed. And with that, Ms. Solholt will describe the bill.
Thank you, Representative.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Beth Solholt with Wind on the Wires. And I would like to talk about Revisor Bill number 053050 today. Representative Gunther has done a great job of walking through the provisions, but I will elaborate a bit on each one of those. You do have before you a side-by-side comparison that I put together simply because I think it's one of the most convenient ways to talk about our bill in comparison to the other two bills that also have similar provisions. And I guess that's the first point that I want to make, is that we do have quite a few similarities between the three transmission bills that you have before you today. We each talk about a cost expedited cost recovery piece. We each talk about identifying transmission for the renewable energy objective, except for the CapEx bill, CapEx 2020 bill. And I think there's a pretty broad desire to see a statewide wind integration study move forward on the heels of the successful Xcel Energy Department of Commerce study that was recently completed. So let me just walk through the sections. Section 1 and 2 really go together, and they are the cost recovery provisions. Our bill allows expedited cost recovery for two things: for transmission studies that really study transmission needed for the REO, and then the transmission that's constructed to serve the facilities, the renewable energy facilities that fulfill the renewable energy objective. The reason that the study costs are important to have expedited cost recovery on also is because the studies are pretty intense studies. They take a lot of resources, and to encourage the utilities to actually get those studies moving forward and identify the transmission facilities, we feel that it's important to also, if it's not already allowed expedited recovery, to have expedited cost recovery on those study costs. Section 1 and 2 together also set criteria for the for expedited cost recovery that the Public Utilities Commission would look at. And there are really three criteria. The first would be that the transmission facilities will transmit power primarily from renewable resources. The second criterion would be that the REO purchase or the REO generator that the utility is purchasing the energy from would actually use the capacity on the new transmission facilities. So in other words, we're not granting expedited cost recovery for new coal or new gas facilities, that the capacity that the utility studies would actually be used by those renewable resources. And the third criterion is that it's a timing issue. It's really important that the timing of the renewable energy resources come precede or correspond with the transmission in-service date. The reason being is that in order for the capacity to be used by those renewable energy resources, we need to have corresponding timing. We don't want the transmission capacity coming on much sooner than the renewable energy facility, simply because then it will be used by some other resource. And so we need to sync up that timing of the renewables and the transmission. And that's really not a problem, because the renewable energy facilities, particularly wind farms, can come on very rapidly as compared to the longer process that it takes to construct transmission. Section 3 is the third, kind of the third box on your side-by-side, and that's really the section that requires utilities to identify transmission needed to meet the renewable energy objective. There is currently in law a statutory requirement that utilities do this through the state biennial transmission plan process. However, in the most recently filed plan by the utilities, even though they had the statutory obligation to identify transmission for the REO, they were in non-compliance with that section. They simply didn't identify transmission needed for the REO. And so this provision simply gets them moving on that piece sooner. It sets a date by which they need to identify that transmission. It gives them a little extra help on actually getting going on those transmission pieces. And then the second piece that's really important is, even if they identify the transmission, we need to move it to the regulatory process, through the approval process. And so it requires that they file certificates of need or file it through the state biennial plan process and get those projects certified as priority projects. Just one other side note. Again, it's a timing issue. If the utilities, and I believe all the utilities have really stated that they intend to meet the good faith objective of being at 10% renewable energy by 2015, but because we know that the transmission piece takes a long time, as Ms. Porfil indicated, it's likely a 6 to 8 year process. And so if we, let's say we're at 2006, and we add 6 to 8 years to that, we're at 2015. And so we need to get moving on the transmission for the REO today. Section 4 exempts wind generators from certificate of need. Currently, things that are approved, for example, through the Excel mandate of the 825 megawatts, or through a commission-approved integrated resource plan, are exempt from certificates of need. This just allows the wind projects to move quicker through the process. Actually, the language would apply to a large energy facility that's 50 megawatts or more that generates electricity from wind and serves Minnesota retail customers. So, for example, the Trimount project, which GRE is doing right now, that's a 100-megawatt project, and they did have to go through a certificate of need. And if there's so many statutory references and the legislature has so clearly spoken that we want renewable energy, we're just trying to remove any burdens that the utilities would have to go through to getting those projects going. Section 5 is a statewide wind integration study, really, which would be patterned off of the Xcel Energy Department of Commerce wind study that was recently completed in December. The benefit of really doing this is twofold. Number one, it answers some of the questions on the impact to reliability and operating costs. That's a very important piece, to have those numbers so that we can make decisions on moving forward with additional renewable energy, for instance. That's a very important piece. But really the second equally important piece is to have the system operators and have the technical folks from the utilities sitting in a technical review committee meeting with going through very robust technical information and through a very thorough process and having them begin to understand how they might mitigate some of the impact, some of the operating variability of wind power, and understand some of the new techniques that are out there, such as wind forecasting. Those are very valuable pieces. So it's not only the numbers that come out of the study, it's the interaction between the participants on the technical review committee. So those are the basic five sections of the bill, and we'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Is there any questions, members?
So, Ms. Soholtz, I just added an S to it.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
On the certificate of need issue, why is that mostly focused to wind? I mean, why not biomass, methane digester, other forms of renewable energy as we view it in statute in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair and members, that's a great question. I guess we were focusing on wind primarily in the bill that we put together. There are certainly other things that are coming forward under the renewable energy objective, and so maybe that's something we need to take a look at. But what we're seeing is that the majority of the renewable energy objective is being filled by wind power, simply for a lot of reasons, economics as well as viability of projects. And so that's why we focused on the wind piece.
But my concern on that, as we go forward, the idea, I think, at least most people thinking of renewable energies, isn't that eventually we'll have all our eggs in one basket, i.e. the windmill. We still need to find a way to baseload that, and it seems to me the more options we have out there, if you have a hurdle for every other renewable energy but wind, you know, that's probably going to be the preference, the method of choice. But it's in long term, it seems to me, and that the committee members could weigh in, you know, as well, but I think we'd want to make that available to all
all the different options, so in 5 or 10 years when something else is as viable or becomes viable, it doesn't have a hurdle that wind doesn't have.
That's a great point, Mr. Chair. If I can just point out, though, that's why we need the statewide wind integration study, is because we will find out that we don't have to have 1 megawatt of baseload for 1 megawatt of renewable energy. And so, mm-hmm. because we'll be integrating it into the entire system. But I agree with your point that we could perhaps look at other resources that are going to fulfill the REO obligation.
So the idea on the integration study, and then Representative Simpson, is basically if you have wind spread throughout the state more, the fact that it's not charging in southwest Minnesota, but there's towers in southeast Minnesota or west central or northern Minnesota, there's going to be at all times a base load of some percentage, whether it's 2%, 10%, versus, am I getting that right?
Yep, you are, Mr. Chair. What the Excel study pointed out was that there's really a basket of solutions to handling the integrating wind into the system. And we studied the Excel system specifically, and so the results in that study apply, you know, to their system. You can't really catapult those results into any other utility system, but we're going to find that there's advanced wind forecasting technology that is really coming on. We're going to find that that the geographic diversity really does help, as you were talking about. Mm-hmm. We're looking at the day-ahead and real-time market starting up in MISO, the Midwest Independent System Operator, on April 1st. That might provide some advantages for the utilities to not self-regulate, but to buy what are called ancillary services from the market. That might be a cost savings. And so what we're going to see in this larger statewide wind integration study is we'll see a basket of solutions and have the utilities understand what the opportunities are for managing the intermittency of wind.
All right. Representative Simpson.
Thank you. My question is answered. You ask it well.
Pass me those notes. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westrom. I think this is a question for research. On page 5 of the bill, line 9 and 10, the costs of the study, this wind integration study, are recoverable under 216B.1645 subdivision 1. Could you tell me what that says?
Mr.
I probably should know, but I don't.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I believe this allows the cost of that study to be recovered from ratepayers.
Uh-huh. Like that. Thank you.
Any other questions, members? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question on page 2 on the under the cost recovery. At the bottom of the page, it talks about the utility has met the following conditions. It's demonstrated that the proposed transmission facilities will transmit electricity primarily from renewable sources. How does a utility demonstrate that for a proposed facility?
Mr. Chair, Representative, when a utility goes to study the transmission that is needed for a particular generator, they do what's called load flow studies, and they will be able to demonstrate through those load flow studies what type of generation they're enabling through the transmission upgrade or the new transmission line. And so we will have an idea from that study what percentage of that line is being used by the renewable resource. So when utilities say that they're kind of agnostic on the types of generators, you know, they have to accommodate all types of people, that's a true statement. But when they do transmission studies for delivery of a certain generator, they know exactly what portion of that line is being used by a certain type of generator.
Representative Hansen, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Representative Thiessen.
Just a quick follow-up on that. What is primarily? Is that a majority, or what? Or is that up to the PUC's discretion, or what is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tisa, we struggled with that, and we settled on the word primarily. It could mean 51%. It could be the Public Utilities Commission could decide that that's, you know, a higher number. But in the end, in whatever vehicle is moving forward, you may see that more clearly defined.
Thank you.
Good question, Representative Tisa. I see primarily as a stronger number than 51%. But Representative Erickson, but before you do that, or ask a question, just to the members in the audience, we are at the end of the presentation. We have about 20 minutes left in our committee, and if there's anybody from out of town particularly that knows they may not be able to make it next week and to start advancing just other discussion comments on the bills, pro or con, please let the page know, and he can bring it, pass a note up here, and we'll open it up for 3 to 5 minute blocks for people that want to start comments today that would be ready with some comments on these bills. And just a roadmap while we're at it. Next Wednesday, we plan on bringing these bills back up for further discussion, receive more testimony, pro and con, and possibly get into some amendments next Wednesday. So just kind of a roadmap, but if we'll start that process today. We expect there will be lots of people that have insight on these and comments, and we'd like to get that started. If you're from out of town, especially, send a note up here. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westrom. Representative Gunther, and maybe I missed this, and I apologize if I did. What is the reason to study the wind integration?
Representative Gunther, Ms. Soho. Ms. Soho maybe wants to answer this.
Yes, Soho, I wanted to know why the wind integration study, and will there also be subsequent studies on biomass, methane, et cetera?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I think the primary reason to do the wind integration study is kind of twofold, like I talked about. Right now, the primary technology that we're seeing fill the renewable energy objective is wind power, simply because it's, from a technology standpoint, it's very cost-effective for the utilities to purchase. And it is competitive with other forms of generation, and they're also as bids. And also, there were such good results from an understanding and a learning curve perspective for Xcel Energy and the Department of Commerce and the people who participated in the technical review committee with the Xcel Department of Commerce study that it's pretty natural for us to then ask the question, well, we've done it for one major utility in Minnesota, but what does it really look like and mean if we integrate a much higher level, much higher penetration of wind in the entire state? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a natural follow-on study to the study we just completed.
Thank you, Ms. Soho.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Gunther and Ms. Soho. We will open it up for some discussion or testimony. At this point, we will renew the motion there really isn't a motion. So we'll just leave that bill alone. We'll get a number, a real number on it next week. Commissioner Nicolai from the PUC, do you want to add some comments? Nobody else has got testimony after this? We don't have any notice yet, so I guess they got the bill. We're ready to proceed next week, members.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nicolai, welcome to the committee. I believe this might be the first time in front of us.
It is in this capacity. Thank you very much, members of the committee. I'm Ken Nicolai, and I serve as a member of the State Public Utilities Commission. The only I have very, very brief comments for you, but the commission met in our planning meeting the other day and discussing the number of the bills that you just had before you. And the commission asked that I just pass on to you a couple of principles that we ask that you give consideration to as you think about this whole issue of cost recovery for transmission and changing the ground rules for cost recovery. And these will seem very simple to you, but I do ask you that you think about them when you start marking up the bill. One is that retail customers should be paying rates that include the cost of transmission that is needed to provide them reliable service. That seems straightforward enough. The second principle we ask you to think about as you start crafting the language is that transmission investment used to sell into the wholesale markets, the cost of that investment should be recovered from those wholesale customers through the MISO and FERC tariffs, and not necessarily from the retail customers directly. And then the third principle that we ask you to think about when you evaluate your bills is that make sure that you continue to enable the Minnesota Commission to investigate and to assure that there is not double recovery of these costs from Minnesota customers. So those are just three simple points that the Commission asked me to and make to you as you start considering these matters. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Nicolai. Is that some prepared words that we could get copies of, or have you email them over to us?
I did bring. I have two extra copies. If that's okay. Any help.
Why don't we have the page get them from you, and they can copy them and get them for next week's folders for members.
Thank you.
Commissioner Nicolai, I have a question. Any other members have a question? This sound like pretty sensible principles. We'd ask you to proceed along with us as we start marking up bills and make sure that we have some of those interests and concerns covered as well. I got a question on one of the bills. At least one of them, a couple of them have variations of it that merge some of the process to the PUC, ranging from eliminating the EQB and the PUC both having review of different parts of the transmission process and applications that come through. What is your thoughts on that? Is that something the PUC thinks would make some sense to have a consistent review of this from the beginning to the end? What's your thoughts?
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that bill will be coming before you sometime soon in the session. And the Commission does think that makes a great deal of sense to move some of those. Well, right now we do the certificate of need assessment and make that determination. Components of that are the siting and routing issues. It would seem to make much more sense to go ahead and consolidate that with the Commission. We think that it'll be a faster, more centralized process.
Okay. Questions, members?
Representative Thiessen.
Sorry to take up so much time today.
No problem.
I have to give today. There you go. The question on the MISO and the FERC tariffs and then the retail tariffs, I think, came up. That was, I think, where my earlier question was going to. Can you explain just generally what the differences are and how they fit together?
As was mentioned earlier, the FERC does regulate the wholesale rates. And one of the things that, of course, will be, and the Minnesota Commission regulates the retail rates here in Minnesota for those companies that are rate regulated. But one of the things, of course, is that you have to keep in mind that these facilities are used in many cases to provide both retail service and to provide capacity, so to allow utilities to sell power that they've generated into wholesale markets that might be into Iowa and into Illinois and other places. And so it's important that the cost recovery be assigned to the right group of customers.
So, Commissioner Nicolai, to expand on that, your third point talked about to make sure you can investigate so nobody's double recovering. Explain Is that a concern that you've had to watch before, or you found happening before, and how does that happen?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. I think that the reason that the this was brought up in our discussion with the other commissioners the other day is that I think that there's just some concern that as we start moving into this this new world of the markets that we will begin seeing April 1st, that we're going to be many more. That we expect to see the percentage of wholesale transactions greatly increase. And as a result, that means that we're going to be faced with a different set of regulatory challenges than we have before. We just want to make sure that that the Commission does, in fact, retain authority to look into those to make sure that the right customers are paying the proper amounts.
Okay. Thank you. No more questions? Commissioner Nicolai, thank you for the presentation. Well done. We look forward to having you back in front of our committee.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, Representative Westerberg, before you run off.
I'm sorry. No, it's not a question.
Oh, it isn't. Okay, sorry. Comment?
Actually, I thought you were going to maybe adjourn here real quick, and I just was going to announce.
No, I've got one more person that's wanting to offer a testimony. And Christian I.D. Tollefson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. And
Christian I.D. Tollefson.
Please try to keep it to 3 to 4 minutes.
I will, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Actually, my comments follow very directly upon Commissioner Nicolai's, the comment he just made that he wanted to make sure that the Commission retains authority so that the costs are appropriately designated when we have pending a lot more new wholesale transactions. There were a couple there's a clarity here that I think we're not necessarily yet understanding, and I'm hoping that perhaps the committee will ask for a little more information about this as you move forward. There are three different kinds of reliability, at least as I understand it. There are people who are much better equipped to discuss this with you, but I want to bring it to your attention. There's reliability for load service, and there's the traditional reliability that we've used to back up, you know, the different systems when they're under stress. And then there's a new dimension of reliability, which is reliability, the capacity needed to serve market transactions. And these have very different implications for Minnesota ratepayers and landowners. And I think it's very important to the question of what costs we're going to ask Minnesotans to bear to make a distinction between these kinds of reliability so that we're not just putting them all into the same ball of wax and saying, you know, we need reliability, and because that's a very important distinction for the costs and the public. I wanted to also make a clarification that I think may not be made in the overview of House File 1347, which is my understanding where it says the federal government has ordered utilities to separate their transmission generation operations, requiring them to transfer operational control of transmission to regional transmission organizations. It's my understanding that the RTOs are like TransLink was proposing to be and ATC. The transfer was to the independent system operators like MISO. And I think that that bears on the request that the utilities are making under Subdivision 7C in their on the second page of their bill at the top, that they be allowed to transfer ownership of those assets. So I you know, that's just a little bit of lack of clarity that I wanted to raise. Thank you very much. I know I see everybody's been working very hard on their bills, and I've been out of the loop for a couple of weeks. So thank you very much. I feel, as a member of the public who's been following these issues for a long time and struggling with all the technical details, I'm very appreciative to come before you and bring this question of what reliability are we talking about, Minnesota ratepayers and landowners giving money and land to serve. Thank you.
Mr.
I'll leave it in your hands.
Could she identify what group she represents? She said landowners and ratepayers. Is that just generally,
do you represent a group?
Oh, I'm from Communities United for Responsible Energy, which is a small citizen-based organization down Lake City.
Okay. Any questions, members? Thank you for your testimony. Anybody else? Anybody from out of town that would like to just send us your only crack at it if you want to come back, but if you can get over some things today that we don't have to spend time on next Wednesday, it just helps it along. But seeing none, Representative Westerberg, you have an announcement?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to call everybody's attention to the gaming meeting on Tuesday because we're bringing in a special guest. The Senate Majority Leader from Kansas, former Senator Lana Olin, will be here, and we're going to be discussing Indian Gaming Compact issues, which obviously the negotiations of compacts do not fall under the purview of the legislature at this time, but I think it'll still be really informative. And since the gaming issues have to all come before your full committee, I would certainly like to extend an invitation for anyone who's on the committee here to attend that meeting on Tuesday.
And I'd echo that, Representative Westerberg. Members, if at all possible, assume it's just as similar as a regulated industry committee next Tuesday. I think it would be beneficial for all of us to be here. We've got an out-of-town witness that the more of us that can hear her insights, ask her questions, I think the better it is for our committee. So while it's the gaming division, please, everybody, feel welcomed and encouraged to try to make it in your schedule. I represent Westerberg.
And, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure, but I think it's one of our members' birthdays today, and I think that we should just, you know, recognize Sandra Erickson here as we celebrate her birthday today.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Sandra. Happy birthday, Sandra. Happy birthday to you.
Todd, this is on tape, everybody.
Well, that was on that sour note.
It was great.
Not the birthday, but the singing. we better not quit our day jobs, members. Meeting is adjourned.